Good morning and welcome to another online Awaken sermon. And as you can all see, today I am joined by a very special guest, Heiko Schwartz. And Heiko has been with our Awaken community now for just about 2 years, I believe, right, Heiko?
Yes, that's right.
And Heiko and his family, they come all the way from Germany. So they've been now in the United States for these 2 years. Heiko works as the head of the political department of the German consulate. So he has a job with plenty of insight to give us. He has all sorts of thoughts. And we've been talking now actually for a couple of weeks sort of about what we want to talk about this morning. And it all started a few weeks ago as we were talking through some of the recent sermons that I've been doing about what makes us human. And Heiko told me that he wrote an article that ties into this whole topic of what makes us human. So he graciously translated it into English for me. So I had a chance. I didn't have to go to my German dictionary and try to translate exactly what he was writing. So I was able to read the article, and it just gave me all sorts of questions. It produced all sorts of thoughts. So I said, hey, would you be willing to have a conversation to dive a bit more into this article and talk a little more about what makes us human? And so here we are. Heiko obviously said yes. And that's what I want to talk about this morning. So Heiko, you've listened now for a couple of weeks of what makes us human. We've had a couple of conversations about some of the topics that we've explored. Just looking back over the past couple of weeks, what has struck you? What's been something interesting about this whole what makes us human conversation?
Especially the things you spoke about the last two weekends, the last two Sundays. First of all, I'm very glad to be talking to you, and I'm very glad. I hope I will all see you soon, Awaken family. And yeah, but what struck a chord within me was, for example, 2 weeks ago, you were talking about living with tension and in hardship, and you were talking about Paul, and I don't even begin to understand what he was going through. But when I look at my life, and that's why it resonated within me, is that the hardest circumstances are sometimes the best learning experience, the best school in a way. So although I don't like living with tension, I think nobody really does be stressed and living in hardship. What I realized is when I am challenged, then my learning curve is the biggest and largest. I learn most. And what came to mind, what sprang to mind, was this verse also given to Paul, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness, especially when we feel weak and really under tension, then it still is the best we can do and give. And what you were talking about last week was also very personal for me. You know, as a diplomat, we are always on the move. We are always looking where we will be living the next 3 or 4 years. And you were sharing about Abraham and, you know, how he started taking a new path, changing the story of his life, and taking the risk to trust God, not knowing where God would lead him, where he would arrive, and if he would arrive somewhere. He was trusting that there was something good coming. And I can very much identify with this, not knowing where to go. You know, right now, in 2 or 3 weeks, there will be lists sent out from the German Federal Foreign Office. And Romy and I will start reading those lists, and these are listings of different cities all around the world. And we will have to choose at least 9 postings where we would be willing to go in 1 or 2 years. So this actually, we do know where we will go in a way. Abraham didn't. And so for me, it was very moving and touching to know he just went, he trusted.
Yeah. I mean, that's really kind of the story of your life right now with your current job, where it's setting down home in a particular place for a short while and then moving on to the next. And I know, you know, one of the things that saddens me is we know that you're not a permanent fixture at Awaken or in New York. And we need more people like you, more loving, compassionate people like you, like Romy, to be in this area. I mean, as we're seeing right now in the news, our world needs it. And knowing that you're right there with us, and to me personally, it means a lot, and just your wisdom. But yeah, going from one place to the next, that's a risky, trust-filled life, right?
It is, but it's also fulfilling. And as much as I regret saying goodbye, it's also the chance to say hello to some new friends. And what I learned over the past perhaps 20 years is many of the friends we made in different places in Africa, in Europe, we are still connected to them thanks to Zoom or whatever, WhatsApp. Yeah. Hope we'll take Awaken with us wherever we go.
Yes. Yeah, it's great having these the technology that allows you to do that.
Yeah.
Now let's talk a bit about this article that you wrote. Now the title, I see the title, I believe in English, The Freedom to Do Good. Is that the title of the article?
Yeah.
And how do you, so in the German language, how do you say that? How does it translate?
Die Freiheit, das Gute zu wählen. I think it would be translated rather the freedom to choose good.
All right.
The question is, are we actually free to, do we have our own will? Are we free to choose the good, or are we just puppets or machines?
Now, what caused you, what inspired you to write this article? What was it, something that someone had asked you to write about? Was it something that one day you woke up and you're like, whoa, I have all these thoughts in my head and I got to put this down on paper?
It was the former. I have a friend and he is working for this journal, and we are in a discussion, in a permanent long distance discussion. And I was talking about what I'm doing and then the challenges I face in my professional life as well. And he said, hey, Heiko, I would like you to write about this and coming from your perspective. And so I find it actually more challenging and more rewarding to sometimes get a topic thrown at your feet, and then you start thinking, trying to grasp it, and then just to write about things you want to write about. So it was more difficult to write about it, but I like it because it makes me think and understand things along the way as well.
Yeah, so at the heart of this article is the question that you ask deep inside: as humans, are we good or are we bad? Do we have this proclivity to do good, or more of a proclivity to do evil or to do bad? And it seems like the answer that you came to in writing the article, it was there's no black and white answer. There's no clear cut answer to that question, is I guess the conclusion that you came to.
Yeah. We just have to look at what Paul is writing in his letters. On the one hand, he's writing, for I do not the good I want to do, but the evil I do not want to do, this I keep doing. And at the same time, he demands, do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. So he seems to ask us to do two things at the same time. He is suffering from his defeat sometimes, that he's doing things he does not want to do, and at the same time he is striving to do better. And it was funny, I was whenever I have a question like that, and I look in the Bible, but at the same time, I want to look at evidence, scientific evidence. And I was looking in the internet, and I found an experiment. Scientists at Yale University wanted also to know exactly, are we good or evil? And they thought of an experiment and performed a puppet show for little children, 6 to 10 months old. And they had one paper cut figure, a colored paper cut figure, with little wiggling eyes, and it tried to climb a tree, but kept slipping. And in the next round, two more figures were added. One helper who pushed from behind and helped getting up the hill, and a preventer, someone who was standing on top of the hill and shoving down. And after this little short play, the scientists offered the kids, the children, the two helper figures, the helper and the preventer. And it's interesting, in most cases, the babies reached out for the one who was helping, for the little figure that pushed upwards and helped. And okay, I know that's not proof that we are good. And cynics could say the babies were just choosing the character they could most benefit of. But I think this experiment shows, and that's actually also what the scientists found, that we prefer friendly intentions. We want to choose the good. And so, as I said, there is no black and white answer. We have the capability of doing good, but at the same time, and we only have to look around us, there is capabilities for great evil, and a lot of evil things are happening. I mean, I don't want to get into politics, but if we look at what's going on right now, people protesting because of things that are not right. Mm-hmm. And others who take this opportunity to start looting. And so there, it's a gray area, and I don't have answers, and I will not get any deeper into this. But what we see here, it's difficult. There is a lot of gray, but there is the desire for good, and there's a desire for fairness, and there's a desire for perfection in a good way.
Yeah, I read in the article about the study. I mean, that's a fascinating study, just this, right, these babies, right? I have a 7-month-old at home, and you know, these kids, same age as my daughter, they're drawn to the helpers. They're drawn to the good, it seems. So yeah. What is it that kind of takes us off that path? How do we, you know, lose sight of the things that, I mean, when I think about this whole idea of, you know, what's deep within us, I think about the image of God that's been planted within each of us. Yeah. And, you know, to me, I look at that as, well, that's goodness that's been birthed within us. We all possess this image of God. So what is it that, you know, what do you think causes it to be clouded over? Or what causes us to lose the plot, whether it's forgetting or whether it's dirtying over the image that we were born with? How do we go on a different trail?
I mean, I just have to look at the first pages of the Bible. If you look at the story of Eden, of the beautiful Garden of Eden, and then however you stand to this story, I think it has very profound truth to tell. You know, just to capture it in 2 sentences, Eve and Adam had a fulfilled life. They hadn't to distinguish between good and evil at all. They naturally did what was good, and they didn't have to think about it. And but there was one thing God had told them, and I think it was a trust question. And he told them, okay, don't eat from the one tree. And it was the one that is so aptly named the tree of the realization of good and evil. And they took a bite, and they knew what evil was at the moment, at that very moment, because they had done the evil thing. They didn't trust God anymore. And I think you are right. We are made in the image of God. We carry God's essence in us. We are God's children, but our existence is muddied and is in a way destroyed. That's what Christians call sin. Now, there is a divide between God and us now. And so I think we still have the ability to do good, but it is, in a way, it's not the perfect good God wants us to do. I think God has to come into our lives again to make us able to choose the good again. Because for me, it's a question of standards or benchmarks. You know, I was in preparation of our conversation, I was looking at the Declaration of Independence. Because, I mean, it's way older than our German basic law, the Grundgesetz, but both start with our responsibility before God. The Declaration of Independence states that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator. So it sets us in relation to someone who's greater, bigger than we are. And so I think what makes us able to do good is to have a benchmark, a standard we compare ourselves to.
So I want to, a couple of thoughts here, but I want to make mention of this, because when I was reading the article that you wrote, it made me think of the Cain and Abel story, where I talk about the beginning of the Bible. And I think so much, I know you touched briefly upon it, but so much of what's going on right now in our country is we're neglecting our responsibility as our brother or our sister's keeper. We're neglecting the humanity of each other. And as a result of it, we're seeing what's happening. And then you touched on this word sin. And there is probably, I don't know if, sometimes I say, well, this is my favorite verse, my favorite story. And then, I'll say I have a different favorite one another week or two later. There's one verse in the Cain and Abel story. And this was actually, I saw this in reading John Steinbeck's East of Eden, because East of Eden is all about the Cain and Abel story, just in a more modern fictionalized version of it. And he talks in the book about this one particular verse, but it says this. So the Lord said to Cain, he goes on and then he says, if you do not do what is right, sin is crouching at your door. It's this picture of sin, evil, anything that breaks the wholeness, the goodness that God desires for this world, sort of lurking in the corner, watching. And then it continues, it says, it desires to have you, but you must master it. And it's just so, I don't know, I love that verse, because it personifies sin in a sense, like a tiger that's lurking in the shadows over there. It's ready to pounce. It's ready to take every opportunity, whether it's letting your guard down or ever so slowly, because I think that's right, getting back to the question we asked earlier about, well, how do we start walking a different path away from the path of goodness or the image of God that we were born with? It happens, at least the way I see it, I think oftentimes it happens very subtly. It's not, sometimes it can be like one big event, but other times it's as if we slowly allow that darkness little by little into our hearts. And then we start moving, and going back to, last week's sermon, we start moving down a different path, a path that's actually away from our truest selves, our truest humanity, maybe you could say. So I don't know, when I was reading that, that verse just totally came to mind.
Oh yeah. I mean, the story of Cain and Abel and the blood that is crying out, it shows just that God is not someone who's far away, but even today, even with the things happening in the United States right now, he is there and is hurting because of what's happening, about the inequalities and about the evil things that are happening.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's important to call things that are evil, to call them evil, because there's clear evil, what we've just seen just in the recent days and weeks, and what's been going on for, you know, for a long time, unfortunately. Now, you talk about a benchmark or a standard about what is good. So what's the benchmark that you look to? What's the standard for showing us what is actually good?
It might sound old-fashioned, but as I said, we look at the Declaration of Independence, the founding fathers of the United States. We look at my founding fathers back in Germany after a terrible war that devastated the whole earth, World War II. And they started all with our responsibility before God. And I think God is an absolute necessity for human beings to understand what good is and what evil is. When moral boundaries blur, when they become more gray, then we have to look in the dark. You know, if absolute standards are rejected, then every new generation has to kind of renegotiate an ethical canon. They have to find out for themselves what is good and what is evil. And I think that's not very helpful. I mean, we do have, let's take, for example, the Ten Commandments. If I look even here in the United States, which I find is more Christian-oriented than Europe, the first four commandments focused on God have been considered outdated by a majority for a long time. And of the other six commandments, depending on our moral perceptions, perhaps murder is still something that's forbidden, theft, false statement, adultery may be a tragedy. Reverence for parents is a pious wish, but desire is almost a good thing. I mean, if you desire it, get it. And God tells us it's not good. And I think when people started to chip away at those good boundaries, it became blurred. And without standards, the distinction between good and evil becomes sometimes a matter of luck. You know, when tolerance, which is very important to be tolerant, but if it's equated with acceptance, to accept everything else, or love is suddenly the same as lack of criticism, I think love should be able to criticize and tell people, hey, that's where we go, where we have to go. So I think God is the answer. God is the necessity, or is the cornerstone for us to understand what is good and what is evil. Even if people, and especially when people don't believe in God anymore and don't believe in a personal God, for me, that is the absolute most important thing that I know. There is someone who is reaching out to me and wants to show me what is good and what is evil.
Yeah, so that's been the guiding force for you. That's been right at the center of the whole thing.
I think so, you know. And when I talk about God, perhaps looking at the Ten Commandments can feel a bit archaic, perhaps, but the one person who made it relatable is Jesus for me. I mean, he took the whole law that the Jewish people, the people of Israel, were following, and he translated it into something on the basis of grace. I mean, you know, Perhaps that's something I should have even said before. I don't think with all our efforts of when we strive to do good that we become saved or get draw ourselves out of the mud or try to get our own salvation. I think the first basic for me is that we are saved by grace, by Jesus. But then we are free to do good. And just looking at what he did, how he faced his critics, how he reached out to people at the fringes of society at his time. That's an example for me.
Yeah, you know, going back to where we started with the conversation about what makes us human, you know, to me, it's always been looking at who Jesus was and seeing the example of Jesus's life.
Yeah.
You know, the movement, right? What Jesus did is he put flesh on particular words, or he put flesh on the law and showed us what grace is and how to live in grace, how to choose that story, and then how that transforms our lives so that we then have the ability or, you know, have a picture of what doing good, what representing God to the world actually looks like, how we're to treat each other, how we're to treat all of our brothers and sisters. Now, we're getting to the end of our time here, but I wanted to ask you one final question. So how have you seen the ability to do good show up in your life?
First of all, knowing that I'm able to do good, or that God makes it possible for me to know what good is, that he gives me free will to choose good and to do good, doesn't mean that I always do the right thing. I stumble, I fall, I get up again, and that is my rhythm. Walking, stumbling, falling, getting up again. So
you're saying you're imperfect? I thought you were totally perfect. That's why I had you on here.
Yeah, you see. Sorry. Okay, we have to stop here. But still, I there are some practical experiences how to do good without being a do-gooder who's just trying to appear to be someone who's very holy. What helps me in my everyday life is to practice good routines. I don't know if you've heard of Pavlov, of this Russian scientist. He's the one who found out about reflexes, and he realized when dogs get food, the saliva starts coming, and the dog, and he connected it with a bell ringing, and later he left the food aside. He just rang the bell, and the dogs had saliva coming, and it was, he had discovered the conditioned reflex. And, you know, in a way, we can train ourselves to do good. I remember when I was a teenager, it was considered good manners to get up for older people in public transport. But I was so shy, and I didn't know, should I? And it's just training, doing it, and other things that are less obvious, probably practice to do good, and keep your eyes open. When I expect that good things are just waiting for me to do them, that God prepares good works for me to live in them, then I will certainly see them throughout the day, everywhere. And third point, perhaps, that is for me one of the hardest, to be ready to do the unplanned and uncomfortable good deed. You know, there are some good deeds we want to do and want everyone to see, perhaps even. But God wants the good deed or the good work that is necessary, and not necessarily the good deed that I find pleasant or nice right now. Perhaps it's something good that I'm supposed to do that will interrupt my working routine or doesn't really fit into my schedule right now, but I should do it because it's good. And yeah, as I said, it doesn't always work with me either.
It sounds like it's learning to trust the spirit.
Yeah, which is actually very, I mean, we just celebrated Pentecost, that God sent his spirit into our lives, that we know where to go. And I find it with good works, with even the same with Abraham. It's not that we have now a navigational system. We don't have Waze implanted. But we do have a compass implanted. We know where the true north is, and we can always see where we should go, which direction we should go, even if we don't know what country we are going to end up in.
Yeah, you may not know what steps or what stops you'll have along the way, but at least there's something that's, the way I like to talk about it and look at it is there's something pulling us forward into the good. Into the life that God has for us. And so, I mean, I love keep your eyes open, right? I mean, that's what it's all about. Too often we close our eyes or we sleepwalk through life. We go on autopilot that we miss the life, the divine life that's right there in front of us. If we would just open our eyes, then we would see it and step into it. That's why I called Awaken, Awaken, because that's what it's all about. It's all about awakening to what the spirit's already doing, right? So how do we see it and then step into it?
That's nice. I didn't know that that was a reason, but it's a good one. I like it.
I'll have to do a whole sermon on just the title of Awaken. Because there's a couple things there. So you know what? You just gave me an idea. All right. Well, hey, that was good. That was helpful. You know, I really appreciate the article you wrote. Maybe we can put the English translation as a link somewhere if you're okay with that.
Sure.
If we have the author's permission.
Yeah, sure. Just go over my English and make it a bit smoother, perhaps.
Hey, I was able, I got it. I totally read right through it. But okay. I mean, so helpful for thinking through this because, I mean, what a big question, right? I mean, what a question. I think we're all asking this question. And the fact that there's no real clear answer, that it's muddy. And I, you know, I had one more quote that I have to read because this is, I think you're going to have to add this to your article. You have to do a second edition. So I'm not sure if you've heard this quote by Alexander Solzhenitsyn. He's a Russian author, and he says, "The line separating good and evil passes not through states, not between classes, nor between political parties either, but right through every human heart."
That's a good one. No, I haven't heard. I mean, I know Alexander Solzhenitsyn, but I like this. Yeah, I'm going to add it.
Well, hey, as we close, would you mind pronouncing a blessing over us this week?
Yes. As you start this week, may you really see the good that God has prepared for you and for me. As you walk, even through difficult circumstances, if you feel still under tension, may you practice good routines, see it as a workout, and be ready to do the good whenever God wants you to do the good. Not whenever you think it would be nice and cozy, but whenever it is really needed. And may you experience God's blessing in doing so and experience how enriching it is to do good by God's grace. Amen.